Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I don't want to be capricious and mean-spirited, but at the same time, I don't want this person to ever have access to our community again.
A teenager is sentenced for a series of arson attacks near Fairbanks. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, February 6th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a new daycare focused on Hmong language and culture opens in Anchorage.
From when I first came to the United States until now, like the Hmong language is like disappearing.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's 3 universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
A polar bear that killed a young mother and her baby last month in the northwest Alaska village of Wales was likely an older animal in poor physical condition. But officials said tests came back negative for pathogens that affect the brain and cause aggressive behavior. Dr. Kimberly Beckman, a state wildlife veterinarian, collected and examined samples from the bear's head the day after the attack, when weather conditions allowed her and an Alaska state trooper to fly to the village. The results of her analysis, which were released Friday, indicate the bear was an adult male, probably older and in poor physical health. Officials sent a tooth to a lab to determine the bear's age, but those results won't be known for months. Standard tests conducted on available tissues for pathogens were negative for rabies, toxoplasmosis, distemper, and avian influenza. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said in a joint statement, quote, "There is no definitive explanation as to why the bear was in poor body condition," end quote. Summer Myomek and her 1-year-old son were mauled to death January 17th as they left the school for a short walk to the town's medical clinic. The Army has begun an investigation into the crash of a Fort Wainwright-based helicopter Sunday at the Talkeetna Airport. Meanwhile, KUAC's Tim Ellis reports 2 soldiers have been released from an Anchorage area hospital after they were treated for injuries sustained in the crash.
The soldiers with Fort Wainwright's 25th Attack Battalion were flying an AH-64D Apache helicopter when it landed at Talkeetna Airport to refuel. And after they'd filled up and were taking off, the pilot lost control and the helicopter hit the ground in what Army officials are calling a rollover accident.
As the helicopter was taking off, for some reason it rotated on its side and the blades impacted the ground and it rolled over.
11th Airborne Division spokesperson John Pinnell said this afternoon that Army officials don't yet know the sequence of events that led to the crash. He says that'll be addressed by investigators from Fort Rucker, Alabama.
We're expecting an investigatory team from the Army's Combat Readiness Center to arrive either Wednesday night or Thursday morning.
Pinnell says until then, the damaged helicopter will remain where it crash landed at the airport. A worker at the airport declined to comment this afternoon, and officials with the State Department of Transportation's Aviation Division didn't return a phone call. The National Transportation Safety Board won't be investigating because the military investigates crashes involving its aircraft. Pinnell said the 2 soldiers injured Sunday were transported to area medical facilities for treatment and later released. He said the Apache they were flying was one of 4 helicopters from Fort Wainwright that were headed to Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson for some training. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
A Fairbanks teenager was sentenced last week for carrying out a series of arson attacks in the Pleasant Valley Two Rivers area in the summer of 2021. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
19-year-old Jameson Gallion was sentenced by Superior Court Judge Paul Lyle to serve 24 years in prison. Given time served since his arrest and assuming a 1/3 sentence reduction for good behavior, Judge Lyle said Galyon's mandatory release date will be in 2037. Galyon is also ordered to pay restitution to victims, including forfeiture of permanent fund dividends. Galyon admitted to setting fire to 7 properties, including 2 structures with people inside, and he pleaded guilty last year to the felony crimes of arson, burglary, criminal mischief, and terroristic threatening. Judge Lyle underscored that it was, quote, sheer happenstance that no one died or was injured in the fires Galyon set. Speaking before a crowded courtroom, Lyle explained key factors weighed in the sentencing, most significantly the seriousness of Galyon's crimes.
The defendant engaged in a series of arsons that caused millions of dollars of damage. He directly endangered the lives of 10 people, some of them as they slept.
Judge Lyle also spoke to letters Galyon sent to the Pleasant Valley Community Association.
Terrorizing and taunting the entire Two Rivers Pleasant Valley community for 3 months in the summer of 2021.
Rehabilitation potential was another factor, and Lyle highlighted Galyon's remorsefulness.
He stood and faced his victims in the courtroom and apologized, which in this court's experience is relatively rare.
Lyle additionally noted Galyon's young age, lack of prior criminal history, and supportive family as favorable to rehabilitation. But he also expressed uncertainty given Galyon's, quote, disturbing motivations for the arson attacks.
Defendant has indicated that he committed the arsons for the thrill of it, to calm his stress, which would return after each fire, for personal satisfaction, and because he allowed wickedness to overtake him. His June 2021 letter said he committed the arsons to obtain revenge and to release anger against people who were unkind.
The sentence Lyle handed down is longer than those recommended by attorneys for Galyon and the state, and it surprised arson victim Donald McKee.
After listening to the DA last week, I was going, it's probably going to serve about 10 years. Well, Judge Lyle put a little bit of teeth to it, and I was happy to see that.
McKee, his wife, and other family members, and a rental tenant escaped a fire that destroyed their multi-structure property. McKee says Galyon should have gotten more time, but some charges were dropped. He estimates the replacement cost of the property he lost at about $2.5 million, but says the arson attack has also taken another type of toll.
This morning, I was taking a shower. Right in the beginning of my shower, the power went out. My first thought was, oh man, another fire. And that's every time the power goes out. I hope I get over that someday.
The arsons also destroyed and heavily damaged buildings belonging to the Pleasant Valley Community Association. Association treasurer and founding board member Bob Sugden expressed mixed emotions after Galyon's sentencing.
Quite frankly, I'm sick at my stomach just having to have relived all of this. I feel like what has been done and what has been sentenced is appropriate and right. I don't want to be capricious and mean-spirited, but at the same time, I don't want this person to ever have access to our community again.
Sugden, a local church pastor, says he hopes Galyon can eventually find some semblance of a healthy and whole life. The courtroom was filled with people for the sentencing, a mix of Pleasant Valley, Two Rivers area residents, including arson victims, as well as family and friends of Jamison Galyon. Galyon looked down for periods of the over hour-long proceeding, but seemed to maintain composure as his sentence was delivered. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, dogs and dog mushers enjoy good racing conditions on the Yukon Quest Trail.
And I had several dogs that are just barking and barking like, why are we stopping? I said, because I'm not in as good a shape as you.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you an Alaska artist or do you know one? March 1st is the deadline to apply for a Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Award. The program provides awards to artists, musicians, performers, writers, and culture bearers. Amounts are increasing. A project award, now $10,000, is available for an Alaska artist at any career stage. Mid-career and established artists may apply for a $25,000 artist fellowship. Learn more at Rasmussen.org. Rasmussen Foundation, promoting a better life for all Alaskans. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Anchorage's Chief Human Resources Officer Nikki Chewbacca suddenly resigned today. Mayor Dave Bronson announced Chewbacca's resignation in a written statement. The statement does not say why Chewbacca stepped down, and a spokesman for Bronson declined to comment. Anchorage Assembly Co-Chair Chris Constant says he didn't expect Chewbacca's resignation, but cited numerous controversies under Chewbacca's tenure.
If you look at the municipality's HR process and hiring practices right now, we're down massive numbers of people, and our labor force is at almost a crisis point, I would say. And all of that rolls right back to Mr. Chewbacca.
In November 2021, Chewbacca defended Bronson's then-nominee for health director, Joe Gerace, calling initial allegations against him, quote, pure character assassination. Gerace eventually resigned from the health director job shortly before a report by Alaska Public Media found that he had lied about his military education and medical credentials. In an unprecedented move, Assembly leaders recently subpoenaed Chewbacca to testify on the hiring, investigation, and eventual resignation of Gerace. Constant said Chewbacca was also the subject of a second subpoena to speak to the Assembly about Gerace tomorrow.
And so, you know, the timing is such that now we have to review the subpoena process and figure out who the right recipient of that subpoena is to get us those records.
Chewbacca also faced criticism last year for supporting Deputy Library Director Judy Elledge as she was being investigated for allegedly making racist and insensitive remarks to staff. Chewbacca is the latest in a string of city executives to leave the Bronson administration. Before working for the administration, Chewbacca was the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Education under Governor Mike Dunleavy. He's also married to Kelly Chewbacca, a Republican candidate who unsuccessfully ran against Lisa Murkowski last year for U.S. Senate. Well, a lack of available and affordable childcare remains a major issue in efforts to bolster Anchorage's economy post-pandemic. A new childcare facility is looking to fill some of that void with an added cultural component. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more on a daycare that's helping foster the city's growing Hmong population.
On an early weekday morning, Chu Hang opens the small door to greet a classroom of toddlers with teachers responding in Hmong.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Hang is the director of the Hmong Cultural Center of Alaska, a daycare she started in Midtown Anchorage in November to help support and educate Hmong people like herself. Her family immigrated to the States after helping Americans in the Vietnam War. She moved to Anchorage in 2011 and began working with the local Hmong community, which has grown rapidly in the city over the past couple decades. And she says she noticed a need.
I know that in the past there's been, like, you know, a little Hmong community where they do gathering, things like that, but it has stopped for a long time. So I met my friend, New, and then we're like, well, you know what, there's nothing going on in Alaska, and we should start a Hmong daycare.
The daycare focuses on bilingual education for Hmong and non-Hmong kids alike.
From when I first came to the United States until now, like, the Hmong language is, like, disappearing. So we want to continue our language onward instead of, like, you know, comes to end where no one knows our Hmong language.
In the classroom, teacher Cao Lee is working with 1 and 2 year olds. This morning, she's reading from a book identifying different family members in Hmong.
We learn about family, grandpa, yao, grandma, pa, bu.
Hang explains that there's a difference in pronunciation between two dialects of Hmong, white and green.
She speaks white and I speak green. So when we say, like, let's say, how are you? So me, I would say, but she's going to say,
yeah.
like that.
Next door is a class of 2 and 3-year-olds sitting in a circle. Roughly half of them are Hmong. Teacher Angelica Vang holds up a flashcard. On one side is the English word with a picture with a Hmong translation on the back.
Ooh, this one is my favorite. How do we say good morning? Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. This one is your favorite. You always say please. Please. Daddy. Talk.
The daycare isn't just for preschoolers. Hong says the center has after-school care, too, for grade school kids up to age 12. Each month, they explore a different Hmong cultural theme. This month involves story cloths.
Back in the days when, you know, Hmong people, they don't have books, they don't have pencils, but they have, you know, needles and, you know, thread. So they use those to create a story cloth to tell story to, you know, about their life.
Though the center has only been open for a few months, Hong says she feels fulfilled when she hears from Hmong parents that their kids have been speaking the language around the house.
Yeah, so Mom was really excited about that. She just told me like 2 days ago about it. It's like, yeah, my daughter, she knows how to speak Hmong. It's like, when I say it, she can repeat after me like clearly. I was like, oh, wow.
Hong says the center still has space for anybody looking for childcare.
You want to look? I love you.
Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Good job.
Warming oceans, loss of sea ice, and rising temperatures are impacting weather patterns across Alaska. While statewide trends show increased precipitation over the past 50 years, a recent report offers insights into the distinct changes Homer and Soldovia may face. As KBBI's Sean McDermott reports, the scientists from the Woodwell Climate Research Center in Massachusetts are helping communities around the world to better understand their unique climate change risks.
Last year in Homer, a warm, dry spring gave way to a damp, gray summer. For Paul Castellani of Willgrove Farm, handling whatever the weather brings is business as usual. He and his wife, Jen, have grown vegetables at their property near Anchor Point for 2 decades.
It wasn't like an extraordinary summer, except for the way that the two types of conditions sort of were so separated.
Weather patterns aren't always so clear-cut on the Kenai Peninsula. Temperatures and precipitation can vary a lot at different elevations. Castellani says there are times when a nearby farm higher up in the hills may get an inch of rain while his property sees a steady drizzle.
Well, I've had summers when they did just fine and my lower field just flooded completely. I didn't even get to plant it until July. So it goes both ways for sure.
That natural variability speaks to the challenges Rick Toman faces in his role as a climate specialist at the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy. While most areas of the state have seen an increase in precipitation over the last half century, rainfall can be quite different from year to year.
Over the long term, everybody's going to see more, but in any given week or month or season, can be very different.
In general, Toman explains that as oceans warm, more moisture evaporates from the water's surface into the atmosphere. When storm systems come along with the right conditions, the additional water vapor makes extreme precipitation more likely.
Over the past several years, Fairbanks and, of course, around the world, we have seen many instances of these extreme precipitation events, whether it's the 40-odd inches of snow in Anchorage in 11 days, or the wettest year on record for both Anchorage and Juneau.
But a lack of data complicates Toman's job of forecasting what the future might hold. Alaska's mountains play a huge role in local weather patterns, and the state has very few observation points or weather stations at higher elevations, and only a handful above 1,000 feet on the Kenai Peninsula.
We don't have a good idea of what's going on in the mountains, and that ultimately is very important for things like snowmelt in the spring, which greatly impacts the ecosystem of the near-coastal environment. So that is really a big problem, that lack of information.
Understanding how weather might shift locally, however, is what city planners and engineers need to know to prepare for a changing climate. And that's exactly the kind of information the Woodwell Climate Research Center hopes to provide. Alex Nagley is a postdoctoral researcher with the Woodwell's Climate Risk Group and helped compile an assessment for Homer and Soldovia last spring.
Our goal with this work is to provide climate projections to communities that don't otherwise have the resources.
Wildfire and flooding are two of the major concerns around Homer and Soldovia. She says both communities will likely see more drought and more intense rainstorms moving forward.
It's something that we're seeing a lot more of everywhere, is this increased variability in precipitation and really more uneven distributions in rain and snow and how that falls throughout the year.
Both towns' airports are likely to be vulnerable to flooding, and in Homer, the Spit, home to the harbor and central to the tourism season, may be increasingly inundated by storms. Meanwhile, wildfire danger will also rise, with peak fire season shifting from July to August. Some changes, like the length of the growing season, are already evident to longtime residents like Castellani.
It doesn't seem to freeze as regularly in October as it used to. It's oftentimes in November. So I'd say a week or two on either end. Snow is usually gone, I would say, on average, a little bit earlier than when we started out here.
Toman, the climatologist, encourages Alaskans to help quantify those kinds of observations by collecting and sharing information on rain and snowfall online. He suggests checking out Colorado State University's Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network for affordable rain gauges and straightforward instructions. On the Kenai Peninsula, Toman says there are only a few observations coming in from around Soldotna and none from Homer. Researchers desperately need more snow and precipitation measurements, he says.
People are still the very best way to get that information.
Reporting in Homer, I'm Sean McDermott.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547. In rural Alaska communities, village public safety officers make a difference every day. Hired regionally, VPSOs are trained in public safety services, such as community policing, fire prevention, life-saving emergency medical response, and search and rescue. VPSO receive competitive pay, benefits, and opportunities for advancement. To start your career in public safety and learn more about becoming a VPSO, go to vpso.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by VPSO.
It was a fast and furious finale for Team Alaska at the Arctic Winter Games in Wood Buffalo, Alberta this weekend.
Come on, you can do it! Go for the gold!
Over the course of 7 days, Alaska athletes amassed 145 medals, that's 58 gold, 44 silver, and 43 bronze, in the shape of the iconic curved knife of the North, the Ulu. Alaska was second in the overall standings behind the Yukon Territories, which finished with 169 medals. Two 18-year-old Alaska natives were in a tie for racking up the most gold medals for Team Alaska. Colton James Paul from Kipnuk and Parker Benjamin Kinnick of Nome each won 5 golden ulus. Both competed in Arctic sports, which feature native games traditionally used to sharpen survival skills. Kinnick says this was his first Arctic Winter Games, so he did not expect to do very well, but says the high level of international competition plus encouragement from his competitors inspired him.
With old friends, new friends, an audience, it'll lift you up and you'll typically break your own records and surprise yourself, put on a show for everybody, have fun all around. It's nice to watch everybody do their best and break their own records.
Alaska also won 9 gold medals in cross-country skiing and 6 in gymnastics, and get ready, the games will take place in Alaska next year in Wasilla. Brent Sass was the first musher into and out of the Circle checkpoint overnight in the Yukon Quest 550, and Sass, a past champion, remains ahead of second place musher and Quest rookie Nick Petit, heading back to Central this evening. Meanwhile, another past Quest winner, Matt Hall, is vying with rookie Isaac Tiford at the front of the Quest 300. Circle is over 200 miles into both races and is the turnaround point. Mushers enjoyed good weather and trail over the first 2 days of racing, KUAC's Lex Trinan reports.
The Steese Highway pullout of mile 101 is the first rest Yukon Quest teams get after their first big challenge of the trail, going over Rosebud Summit. This year, the trail was awesome, says 300 racer Jennifer Labar.
There was like great snow up there this time for the first time ever that I've done it.
To get over the treeless pass that connects the trail from Chena Hot Springs Road to the Steese Highway, mushers often have to get off their sleds and run alongside to push the sled up the hill. Labar, ladling her dog some meat stew, says she was the weakest link of her team up the climb. Okay.
And I had several dogs that are just barking and barking like, why are we stopping? I said, because I'm not in as good a shape as you.
550 musher Deke Noctegaborin makes it sound even more painful.
You push and run up that hill until you feel like you're going to be sick, and then you have to stop and do it all over again.
300 musher Ron Stifler said he was down to his base layers, huffing and puffing behind his team. It almost made him miss the view on the clear night.
Didn't get to enjoy it until I actually got to the top, and then I was able to look around because you're just working so hard.
Shani Traska, racing the 550, also says she enjoyed the view.
You can just see for miles and miles all the valleys and mountains around. It's just stunning.
She and most of the other mushers got to see the other challenging summit of the Yukon Quest in the daylight. That would be Eagle Summit. Eagle is known as the steeper, more intense of the two climbs on the Quest Trail. Around noon on Sunday, the wind was blowing steady with temperatures hovering around 0 degrees, significantly warmer than in the valleys below. After cresting the last steep pitch of the climb to the summit, Traska agrees to an interview with this out-of-breath public radio reporter running beside her. She says Eagle Summit, if anything, is even better than her run-up Rosebud.
How was the run?
A little windy, but it's beautiful.
How tired are you?
Not too bad. The dogs did most of the work this time.
Can you describe for the radio audience what this looks like?
We can see for miles and miles up here. Just a beautiful day. Feels like we're on top of the world right here.
So how does the snow affect going on the downhill? It's pretty deep and soft.
Yeah, it'll probably be trenched out from the teams ahead of us. I actually have chains that I just dropped on my runners to help create friction to slow us down. This is such a steep drop.
All right, have fun.
Unlike last year, where several teams were forced to turn back because of a storm, this year most teams make it over Eagle Summit without much incident. At Central, teams pull in throughout the afternoon on Sunday. Their first stop after climbing Eagle. It's
going?
A bit of a relief, says 300 musher Ashley Dove after her first shot at the summit.
Eagle Summit up over Dunzo.
Beautiful.
I'm just sailing from there. How are we staying?
Inside, the chefs at Central Roadhouse are busy dishing out French fries and bacon burgers, free for all the mushers. For 300 musher Samantha Lalonde, who pulls into Central as the sun starts to set, it's tempting.
It sure is. That cheeseburger is.
But she says she's headed off to camp on the trail in order to stick to her run-rest schedule. 550 musher Nick Petit is also getting ready to go down the trail. He says he's glad to be done with the climbs, at least for a while.
I don't like running.
You don't like running?
I don't like running, and I had to.
How come you don't like running?
Because I'm not an athlete.
For Petit and the other 550 mushers, they'll have to turn around from Circle and come right back over the two summits. Reporting on the Yukon Quest Trail in Central, I'm Lex Trinan.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Wesley Early and Rhonda McBride in Anchorage, Sean McDermott in Homer, and Lex Trinan out there somewhere on the Yukon Quest Trail. Our audio engineer tonight is Dave Emmert. Annie Fite produced tonight's show, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training to provide jobs right here at home. ConocoPhillips, Alaska.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.